Now, just before we get into the episode, I do apologize for my audio. There were some tech issues with my laptop, and I was unable to use my microphone. So apologies for the audio. I've tried to fix it as best as I can, but Pete and Rob are as clear as ever.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Christ MotoGP podcast. And this weekend we have the Portuguese Grand Prix and as well some World Superbike action. I'm joined by Pete McLaren and Rob Jones. Pete, how are we?
Good, thank you, Jordan. Yes, as you say, it's Portimao. It's round two officially, but almost feels like round one part B with everything that will change this weekend. No tests beforehand. Completely different circuit, as I'm sure we'll get onto. Different temperatures, everything. So some surprises, I'm sure.
Rob, this weekend for World Superbike as well, it's going to be not as a surprise as Philip Island, but you know, going to a circuit like Barcelona, you know, it offers up sometimes some good racing and sometimes we get some pretty one-sided racing.
Yeah, it's it's been a happy hunting ground for Bautista, that's for sure. And obviously in the test, which we'll get onto a bit later on, he sort of made a return to form and looked a lot stronger compared to Philip Island, which was a surprise to see him struggle the way he did. And although he's sort of, I guess you could say, back in a way, I still think there's going to be the potential for other riders to maybe steal some wins and at least be competitive with him. If Bautista does win, I don't think he'll be with the same level of dominance as we've seen before.
Yeah, and just going back to MotoGP, Pete, Portimao, it's quite a quirky circuit. It's a circuit, like, this feels like it's been around for a long time, but it actually hasn't. It's only been on the calendar since 2020 due to COVID. And then we have, of course, double races in 21. But it's a circuit that, you know, a lot of the riders love. And we do get some mixed results sometimes. You know, we've seen Oliveira in the past, you know, dominate. And same again for Fabio Quartararo. And, you know, what are we expecting this weekend? Are we expecting a close battle between the top guys, or will we see someone run off in the distance?
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think it's hard to know now, for the reasons you say, what to expect, because it's a very different track to where they've been this year, isn't it? Both Sepang and Qatar, great big wide circuits, completely different climates as well. And then you've got Portimao, tight, twisty, the European continent, European weather. Looks like it'll be okay, pretty stable this weekend, but what, low 20s, that sort of temperature. Difficult to pass on. Looks fantastic just to ride around, let alone race. It's a great event and a great place to go to watch bikes. Of course, the start of the European season, not officially, of course, you know, we've got the run coming on from Jerez onwards, but it's the first European round of the year, so there's sure to be a lot of fans there. And I think, last year, for example, if we just look back 12 months to the opening round, we saw a lot of different surprises, didn't we? Marc Marquez on pole, for example, and things like that. So, you know, I think, as you say, Oliveira shocked everybody, didn't he? That first event came out a bit like Nicky Hayden at Laguna Seca all those years previously. Pulled out the home knowledge, didn't he? And really just disappeared. So that was the ultimate in a runaway win. But we have seen some other closer races. And, as Rob will know, World Superbike's been going there a lot longer than MotoGP. And again, has seen the full range, isn't it, of runaway wins, but also right down to the wire. So let's see what this weekend has in store.
Of course, last year we also seen the first sprint race officially in MotoGP around Portimao, and it was very exciting. You know, we got a last lap overtake. You know, it is that type of circuit, like you say, the nature of it. It can lend itself to very close racing. Then on the flip side, if someone is just in a really good rhythm, they can disappear. But when you look at the class that we have this year, you know, I don't mean to put anyone off, but it seems like the Ducatis are very strong. And Rob, who do you think outside of the Ducatis can actually challenge this weekend?
To your point, Ducati are very, very strong at the moment, and it's going to be difficult to beat them. But I do think KTM with Brad Binder have got a good chance. You know, we've seen KTM win there before, and I think, you know, it's very early in the season, but they're arguably stronger than they've ever been, and Brad Binder is riding maybe as well as anyone else is on the grid. So I think if there's any bike and rider combination that could threaten Ducati this weekend, it's Brad Binder and KTM. Obviously, we've seen Yamaha go very well there before with Quartararo. I think he's won there on a couple of occasions, but... Yep. You know, I think we'd all be stunned if Yamaha were able to be in contention for a podium or even a win. So I think Brad Binder and KTM is the combination to look to.
Yeah, like you said, Quartararo has won there on two occasions, but even last year, Pete kind of seen Yamaha, they weren't really able to make the dent like they were in 22 and 21 around Portimao. Just coming on to Aprilia, you know, Maverick Vinales was very strong here last year. They actually got right on the rear of Pecco Bagnaia in the Grand Prix. It's a lot closer than a lot of people actually expected. You know, what do you think for Aprilia this weekend? Of course, we can touch on Miguel Oliveira, of course, home crowd, you know, a big race for him as well.
Yeah, exactly, Jordan. Yeah, I think there'll be high hopes for Aprilia, really, when you look at the pace that Aleix had until the Grand Prix in Qatar. You know, if he can pick up where he left off in the sprint race, avoid those tyre problems or whatever it was that happened on the Sunday, maybe we'll find out more this weekend as to what exactly why he wasn't able to perform in the race as everyone really thought he was going to. Oliveira, as you say, home race, it's the kind of track where the rider can make a difference, isn't it? So you can sort of, as we saw with Marc Marquez on the Honda last year, for example, as well, where if a rider is really in tune with the track and has the bike working, it's a confidence track because it's continually up and down the blind corners. You can make the difference. You can override the machine a bit, I suppose you could say. So Oliveira is still trying to take steps, isn't he? A bit like Maverick with this new Aprilia, get as comfortable on it as Aleix already, it seems, is. And this would be the perfect place to do it, wouldn't it?
For all surprises, I think back to 22 when Fabio Quartararo won around there. It was a weird weekend. It was wet and it was changeable conditions. It was slightly cooler. But this weekend, we're not going to get any variable weather from what the forecast shows. Do you think, you know, when you look at the form book, Pecco Bagnaia, he won two races here last year. He done the double and, of course, winning the Grand Prix in Qatar. Rob, do you think it's just going to be a continuation of him heading into this weekend as the favourite? Because we do have Jorge Martin, who challenged him last year in the sprint.
Yeah, I think, especially in the Grand Prix, I think the form Bagnaia is showing is quite scary for the opposition. Because in Qatar, obviously, Martin won the sprint, and I thought with Binder performing so well on Saturday, with Aleix performing so well, and Martin, we all had this hope that, you know, it'd be quite a big fight for the win. And then as soon as lap one was over, Bagnaia sort of cemented himself in top spot and was just not going to allow the race to get out of hand or be competitive. And I think given his form, not just at Portimao, but his form with the Ducati at the moment in general, it's going to be very, very hard to beat him. And I don't want to say shocked, that's, it's a big word, but I'd be surprised if he's not, if he doesn't win at least one of the two races.
Pete, Rob mentioned that, you know, Bagnaia hit the front straight away in Qatar because he knew, you know, if he got out front, not that it'd be very difficult for people to overtake him because of tire management. Could we see something for Portimao, you know, something similar? Is the track as hard on its tires, would you say, compared to Qatar?
I Traditionally, not so, I don't think. I don't think it'll be as sort of dramatic a difference or as dramatic a tyre wear race. I mean, I think Bagnaia said he could have gone half a second quicker, didn't he, if he'd have been really pushing his bike and tyres to the limit in the Grand Prix rather than managing it. But I think there is still a few question marks for Bagnaia. You know, he was a bit slow getting up to speed again, wasn't he, in Qatar? And here you're going to jump into a weekend where on Friday afternoon, you've got to be top 10 and into directly into Q2.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a slight sort of, you know, he'll want to get straight up to speed, won't he, Friday morning. He'll want to have the bike where he wants it and go from there and not have really what we saw a lot of last season where he was playing catch-up right up until the races and then would suddenly deliver, wouldn't he? Sometimes it took until the Sunday race. You know, he was still sort of getting things worked out even in the sprint. I think the other thing is maybe this chatter issue that we've heard about, haven't we, a bit at Qatar. The last thing they'll want is for it to carry on to Portimao. Let's see. It seems that it was worse in Qatar than it was in Sepang. I think maybe one or two riders might have mentioned it, but it wasn't a big thing there. You know, the nightmare scenario is if you have this persistent issue of chatter. I was doing some team profiles for Crash last week, and I was doing the Monster Yamaha one. And I, sort of as I was going through and sort of looking things up, I came across an interview I did with Masao Furusawa from 2010. He was the guy who transformed the Yamaha engineering sort of side a year before Rossi arrived.
Yeah.
And well, two things spring to mind. The first is that 2003, of course, was their winless season, their last winless season until last year. So that's one parallel. But the second one was that the Saab 2006, they had a big chatter problem.
That's true.
And he was explaining that one, it's a bit of a phenomenon. It's not completely clear still for motorcycle engineers nowadays, you know, where it comes from and how you fix it sort of thing. But it's almost a bit of trial and error to get rid of it once if you sort of stumble upon it. But he was saying that in 06, the issue was that they were trying to make the bike sort of less stiff laterally, so it flexed more in the corner. Now, the problem was that one way to avoid chatter is to basically have stiffness that bends smoothly, a bit like a fishing rod, if you like,
yep.
Or a tree, you know, right from the top to the bottom. No big changes in stiffness along the way. The trouble was that some of the parts were already so sort of on the limit thickness-wise, they couldn't make them much thinner. So they made other parts thinner. That made the changes in stiffness along the bike, and that gave them the chatter. Now, it doesn't look... It was a big thing, wasn't it? The early years of MotoGP, riders were always... It was the dreaded word. If they hit chatter, it was a massive problem, and they'd be, you know, they'd lose a second or so a lap, and
yep.
It could destroy your season, couldn't it? It doesn't look like, fortunately for Ducati, it's as big a problem as that. It seems to come in with used tyres, doesn't it? More than with the new tyres. So let's see. But certainly, I think, you know, there will be a few people holding their breath to see if this problem that really at Qatar, they went through the test and the race weekend with riders still, they were still suffering it, weren't they? So they weren't able to tune it out in Qatar. They'll hope that doesn't reappear.
It's a strange one, like you say, because last year, I can't really remember the GP23s really, riders complaining about chatter, but then on the flip side, Marc Márquez and Alex Márquez were speaking to Susie Perry and she asked them about it and it's strange that's carried on to that bike. And maybe just starting to think across the board, is it just Qatar maybe that has done this to the Ducati? You know, it's the 24 and the 23 riders that are complaining about it. So, like, interesting to see if it carries into this weekend. But I think Marc Márquez's response to it was it doesn't really bother him. He just gets on with it because I think, you know, he had other problems last year on the Honda that were much bigger. And I think if this is the only issue he has with the Ducati, I mean, that's pretty good for him. Jorge Martin was the rider who's been probably, I'd say, the most vocal about it. You know, he said that it hindered him in testing a bit. And you look at Pramac, you know, they are the satellite factory team. And there is some news going about today that unofficially, well, it's not been announced yet. And when we're recording this, nothing's been discussed. Fermín Ødegaard is essentially going to be announced as a Pramac rider, it looks like, this week. Rob, what do you think in terms of Martin going forward? Because Gino Borsoi said to motorsport.com last week that essentially they're not expecting Martin to stay on. So what domino effect is this Ødegaard move going to have for everyone going forward?
Well, I think that obviously it's not been confirmed yet, but I think it's the worst kept secret from the winters is we all expect Ødegaard to join Ducati and to join Pramac. And I think for Ducati, it's a great signing because he's, you know, in Moto2, he's the big hot shot at the moment, and he's extremely talented and is just going to improve Ducati's rider pool tremendously. What it does do is, I mean, I think it gives Martin one of two options, which is to obviously bank on himself to get the second factory Ducati seat, which is probably still a big if at the moment, even if he performs really well this year, because we just don't know what direction the factory team will want to go in or how they'll want to sort of line up alongside Pecco. And then, you know, if that happens, then it doesn't really affect the grid too much. But if he doesn't get that seat, then there's only one thing that happens, which is Martin leaving Ducati, which would throw a massive spanner onto the grid, because it's a case of Ducati losing one of their best riders and another brand who maybe couldn't have seen themselves signing Martin. And it was, you know, if I'm being honest, I'm thinking in particular about the two Japanese brands. It's a massive potential name out there to go and rebuild your project around. So I think the Aldeguer news is great for Ducati, but it also puts more emphasis on them to now figure out what they're going to do with Martin.
Yeah, Pete, we've talked about this. It's essentially you might lose one rider of your talent pool. And, you know, Martin into the factory squad, as Rob said, you know, it doesn't really seem as maybe as clear as it was last year. I don't know what this is. I think he's still the favourite. You have Andrea Bastianini, who could still perform, and we know how good he is. It's only the second round of the season. But you also have Marc Marquez, for example. You have Fabio Quartararo as well. Pete, do you think it's as clear of where Martin will go if, you know, like we say, Borsoi's comments essentially say he's going to leave Pramac at the end of this year?
I don't think it is clear. No, John, for the reasons that you and Rob have explained, there's so many sort of unknowns out there, isn't there? And how other teams will respond if he is available. I think the fact that he is leaving Pramac is not a shock. I mean, assuming it's confirmed, I think we've seen, haven't we? He was in contention for the factory seat, lost out to Bastianini. But really, from the closing stages of last year, he's been saying, isn't he, what more can I do? And making clear that, I mean, he almost became the first satellite world champion in the MotoGP era, didn't he? Yeah. I mean, there really isn't much more that he could do on that bike other than win it, of course. And he came very close. So I think he's made clear that that's where he sees himself as a factory rider. The big call he might have to make, and this is what you're alluding to, I think, is does he still want to be a factory rider if it's not with Ducati? You know, do you put that above the competitiveness of the bike? Do you take a longer term view, should we say, and look at trying to build a project with one of the Japanese teams? Or do you sort of, you know, almost say, you know what, just looking at it on paper, what's the best bike for me now? It's to be on a factory Ducati at Pramac, even if it's not the factory team. So it's going to be some big decisions. I mean, in theory, he could be teammate to Aldeguer, couldn't he? I mean, Morbidelli is on the other bike at the moment. There's been some rumours that maybe Pramac won't have two factory bikes next year, that maybe the factory bikes won't, you know, maybe one at one team, one at another team or something. If Yamaha gets another satellite team, we're carrying on with the ifs here, aren't we? But that would remove one of the current Ducati teams, presumably, from the list as well. So that would then have a reshuffle of Ducati seats. But, I mean, Ducati have done really well to keep all of these young rising stars on board until now, but I think it's inevitable that they're going to lose as these guys get on and on in MotoGP, and they're not rookies anymore, are they? You know, Jorge Martin, he's a championship contender already. They get to the stage where they want to be factory riders, but there's only two seats, as you guys have said. Bagnaia's already signed, so they've only actually one more seat at the factory Ducati team, and loads of guys. You could throw Bezzecchi in there. I know he's having troubles at the start of this year, but he showed that he could do last year. That's another name in there. You know, you've got probably five or six riders that potentially could be alongside Bagnaia. And if you're Jorge Martin, that's the decision, isn't it? How badly do you want the factory seat with Ducati? Do you go to another team? Could you even stay with Pramac? Let's see. But Gino Borsoi, as you say, clearly seems to believe that Martin wants to be a factory rider in 2025. And I think none of us will be shocked to see that that's the case. But where will it be?
If there's something I could add, I think it's also going to be important, like Pete said, for Martin, it's a case of, I think there's real value to staying with Ducati, even if it's with Pramac, to be on a competitive bike. But from his mentality and his perspective, if he performs similar to what he does last year, and then say the factory team went and signed Marc Marquez, how would he feel? Would he feel like he's been overlooked again?
And it's a question of value, isn't it? It's like, it doesn't seem value.
Ducati solely for that reason. So, you know, I think there's a lot at play for Martin as well, mentally, in how he's assessing.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah.
We've seen that, like you say, we've seen it in 2022 with the Bastianini sort of signing, you know. Martin was pretty, they'd done a great little mini-series on MotoGP.com about it, and he seemed pretty sure that he was going to get that seat. And then when Bastianini got it, it looked a bit frosty. Like, he didn't really seem as valued as he thought, because he was that rider, other than Bagnaia, that could fit in that spot. So it's a very interesting plot for this season. I think it'll be one that Ducati maybe want to get sorted quicker than actually it'll be, but I think it'll drag on a bit, because you know this, like, you have so many riders on the table in a contract year that it could go any way, and we could see a completely different grid next year. And when we come to riders potentially on the move, Pete, Fabio Quartararo, there was a report in Italy, I believe, from like this Moto Sprint, they said that Aprilia have made contact with Quartararo, and it's not really a surprise given the struggles of Yamaha, but do you think that is his most likely landing spot, other than Yamaha, being on a factory Aprilia?
If you look at it on paper, isn't it, you say, right, well, if you want a competitive bike, then you need to be on a European bike at the moment. As we've just been saying, Ducati's already overflowing with the options, isn't it? That's not to say that Quartararo might not be with another one, but looking at their history, when was the last time they put someone straight into the factory team? It would have been Lorenzo, I guess.
Yeah.
And that took, what, until halfway through the second year to work. So, and ever since then, they've always promoted from within the satellite teams, haven't they? So if they follow that pattern again, where they say, okay, look, we'll put you on a satellite bike first, just to see if you suit the Ducati, the Desmo Zedici, and then we put you in the factory team if you prove that you can do it. So if they follow that again, then obviously that puts Quartararo out of the running, unless he's prepared to do a Marc Marquez, go to a satellite team first. Then you've got KTM again. We've already mentioned them. They've already got Acosta there. They've got Miller there at the moment. So they've already got a couple of options there as well. So Aprilia is on paper, I guess, the best chance. And also, I mean, again, they've got the factory bike at the Trackhouse team now, haven't they, as well? Now, would that be good enough for a rider, a former world champion of Quartararo's stature? Who knows? But I mean, Brivio's there. He's a world championship winning team manager. If Aprilia could, you know, convince them that the support that they would get as a rider at Trackhouse is equal to the factory team, maybe that's an option for other riders. You know, they'll look at it as, well, like the Pramac ride is now, you know, as a seat that can win races and challenge for the championship. So, yeah, I think on paper you would say there's more obvious options there to ride an Aprilia, but we don't know. Yeah, what's Quartararo thinking? Let's see. You've got to imagine that wherever his starting point was as far as thinking about 2025, remaining with Yamaha must have taken a knock after Qatar, hasn't it? It must have gone a step back after that sort of, the difference of to the top growing as much as it did.
Like you say, anything's possible these days with MotoGP. You know, there's not really any sort of satellite teams that we can say, you know, Marc Marquez on Agostini. Who would have seen that at the start of last year? You know, anything can happen. And I think when you see the biggest rider in MotoGP make that jump, I think the other riders will just go, you know what? If he can do it, why can't I? But yeah, a lot of interest into this Quartararo story. I think we're going to see a lot more rumors, I think, as we get further into the European season. You know, we'll see, no doubt, Pete, you'll be managers running the boat in between trucks in the paddock. We'll see that. And yeah, I think it's very interesting that we're already talking about 2025 already. We haven't even had the second round yet. But getting back to Portimão, it is a circuit that, how can we put it, it's a real fan favourite. The race results that we had last year were, when you look at it, you know, Jorge Martin second, Pecco Bagnaia was first in the sprint. Are we honestly going to expect anything different? Are we going to see someone completely surprised? We're not going to see a Honda come out of nowhere. Obviously, Marc Marquez last year. See, when you think of the Ducati riders, do you think the 23, you know, looking at Marc Marquez, Alex Marquez, Fabio DiGiantonio and Marco Bezzecchi, will they have an advantage this weekend?
As far as, because there's been no testing, you mean? I think that's definitely possible to be that, you know, they're going to come in, they'll have settings already from the guys last year that they can just plug straight into the bike and it'll give them a good starting point. And yeah, it's certainly possible that, as you say, Bezzecchi was on the podium last year, wasn't he? So,
yep.
And then, obviously there was the test last year, we should say, before the race. So it was different to this year. But yeah, it's going to be all about who gets up to speed the quickest and I think feels instantly comfortable on the bike. And I think the satellite guys, who also in testing didn't have as many parts to try, they've got just a much greater knowledge of the bike going into this sort of this big unknown of this weekend. So yeah, definitely, I think we can see a satellite rider on the podium in both races.
And Rob, speaking about Alex Marquez, he hasn't really got any really attention this year because his brother's kind of taken it all. But I've been really impressed with him from testing and in Qatar. You know, he had very solid pace and he was inside the top six for the Grand Prix. Going into this weekend, he had a very strong first outing last year. He fought for the podium for a bit before, I think, he finished inside the top five. I think he was in maybe sixth. He fought the KTMs. How do you think he's going to go this weekend?
I think he's got the potential to do really, really well this weekend. I think, like you said, in Qatar, his race pace, late race pace in the Grand Prix was very, very strong. And obviously, he's got a good record in the sprints. It's where his two wins came last season. So I think I've got high expectations for both Grassini riders and obviously both Marquez brothers. I think they've got, with the data they've got, but also the performance that they've got from testing and the opening round, I think both of them could be in contention for the podium. And I think Alex Marquez, you know, for as much as he loves his brother and they have a great reputation and like communication together, he'll want to beat Marquez as well. He'll want to be able to show that on the same bike, because this is his first real opportunity. When they were teammates at Repsol,
yes,
we know what happened to Mark. And there wasn't really that chance to show himself as much as he probably thought he was going to have. So I think for him, it'll be, you know, it's a big year in general. But I think this weekend being a weekend where he goes back to, which was a strong round for him last year, I think he's got the potential to do really well and fight for the podium, at least in the sprint, if not both races.
Also as well, he actually carried strong form from his Honda days in 2021 at the second race we had in Portimão. He like a red flag, but he was in the podium battle along with, I think it was Jack Miller for third place. So Alex Marquez, keep an eye on him this weekend. If you're listening, I think he'll be a very strong rider. Then Rob, we're going to come to World Superbike. So we've got the second round caught up this weekend in Barcelona. They were testing there and it seems that from what, looking at the results, the usual suspects started to creep up towards the top. Alvaro Bautista saying that he feels back to normal after some struggles with injury, you know, had an up and down first round, but overall it was quite positive towards the end. Nicolò Buniga set the fastest ever lap around Barcelona on the Ducati. The top rack looked pretty fast as well. What was your takeaway from the test heading into this weekend?
I think the first two places to start were, to your point, Ducati, Bautista being somewhat back. I mean, day two was a slight step back. Obviously, after day one, he was very, very happy with how the bike felt. And then after day two, he sort of, from immediately coming out of pit lane, he sort of felt a bit lost compared to day one. So it wasn't, I think, the step he was hoping for again to make. But the base level of performance was there again, which is exciting for him. But the most impressive thing is Brulinga and his continued performance. I mean, to win as a rookie in the first race in Philippine was amazing, but it's not fazed him at all. There's been no added pressure because of it, or that's how it seems anyway. He's just delivering every time he gets on that bike. And I think, again, he's already shown an ability to understand the tyres, which is very, very difficult for anyone who comes into World Superbike. We've seen that's where big names who have joined the championship have sort of struggled the most. And he's been able to deliver straight away. So I think come this weekend, they're both going to be in contention, but I think Brulinga's got a great chance to maybe even beat Bautista in one of the races. And then looking at BMW and Toprak, there's never going to be a day where Toprak isn't fast on that bike. I mean, he's going to be fast on anything. It's whether the BMW can do it over race distance.
Yeah.
A circuit like that, which is very hard on tyres, can they keep the tyres in check and be competitive late into the race? That's, I think, where Toprak and BMW are going to have to try and prove something this weekend.
Yeah, and you mentioned about tyres. I believe they've got a new tyre introduced. Is it the rear tyre? It's supposed to give the riders more stability. Did you hear any comments from them, you know, after testing it? Were they positive about it?
Yeah, so Brulinga and Alex Lowes were both very positive about the new tyre. And like you said, it's a tyre that it's the same compound as the XCS. It's just been brought forward as like a development tyre, and it'll be available this weekend to give the riders more stability and be a bit more to perform over longer periods. So I think it's a tyre that, especially around like Catalunya, is going to help a lot.
And what about Jonathan Rea? You know, it was a disastrous first round for him. I will think going into that weekend, he thought we went as bad as it did, but a bit more positivity coming out of this test. Where do you see him lining up this weekend?
I think Jonathan Rea's got a chance to be fighting back where he belongs, which is at the front. Obviously, like you said, Phillip Island, the championship used to be two races per weekend, but as it goes for a free race weekend, it was the worst weekend of his career. And especially the first couple of tests in Jerez and Portimao, he seemed to gel quite well with the bike. So that whole week in Phillip Island, where they had the test on the Monday and then the race weekend, and it completely just nosedived. Something could have gone wrong. He didn't feel comfortable with the bike at all, and they just couldn't get a handle on it. But in Catalonia, he's looked much, much stronger. And I think he'll be, you know, he's being pushed along by Locatelli, who's performing well. But I think just the more time he gets on that bike, he's going to get stronger and stronger. And I think he'll be back at least in the top five this weekend.
And then just touching on Alex Lowes and Kawasaki, I was really surprised with their pace. Not so much Alex, I know he loves Phillip Island. And the Kawasaki was allowed to make some tweaks over the winter that seemed to help their bike massively in terms of just how rider friendly it is with the tires, because that was the real thing last year that they struggled with. I mean, for the past few years, that, you know, they would start strong and then the tire wear would just go. How was he after the test in Barcelona? And can he realistically come out of this weekend still leading the championship?
I think it's going to be difficult. I think the test went well in some parts, and I think they have improved the bike in terms of its performance on race tires over like long distance, and they have made a step. What I would say is Phillip Island with a new track surface did help them, and he's always been strong at Phillip Island, and Bautista kind of said as much after the season opener. He was asked about Lowes being a title contender, and he pretty much said, you know, Alex Lowes goes really well here. Let's see what he does at other circuits. And Catalunya, I think, is going to be a bit of a struggle for Kawasaki. So I think if he could come away with a couple of podiums and still in the mix and not lose too many points, I think that would be a really good round, just because I think the circuit just doesn't lend itself to sort of Kawasaki strengths. So yeah. I think Alex Lowes is going to have to deliver sort of what Kawasaki will expect now, because he is that number one rider, having taken over from Jonathan Rea. So he's going to, on weekends where the bike isn't potentially at its best, he's going to have to go above and beyond and deliver a podium like Jonathan Rea would have, which will obviously be difficult.
Yeah, so World Superbike is on this weekend as well as MotoGP. Nicely laid out by the calendar there to have both European rounds on at the same time. That's just what we want as motorbike fans. But of course, plenty of action, and we'll have it all covered on Christ.net. Just before we go, gents, I want to talk about just predictions. I know it's always difficult because you don't know what happens going into a race weekend, but we're going to start with the sprint. Pete, who do you think from MotoGP, who is going to be the man to beat in the sprint race?
I don't think I'll be shocking anyone by saying Jorge Martin for the sprint, but yeah, I think he's at the moment he's the guy, isn't he, for sprint races? And yeah, I think he starts as the guy to beat for me.
Rob, please don't say Martin.
I'm not actually. I'm going to go with Marc Marquez. I think.
Okay.
I think he's going to win. I think he's going to put it on the front row in qualifying, if not pole. Maybe with some help from a Martin or Bagnaia. But I think in the sprint he'll be the one to beat. I think if he gets a good start, he'll be just. I mean, he'll want to win, and he'll want to win early to show that he can mix it with Martin on that bike. And in the sprint, if he can win, that's a big message.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to say Brad Binder just to be different, just for a KTM. They've been quick here in the past, but yeah, I just think this year something seems different. I think they're confident going into any circuit. Now, hopefully, you know, for the championship's sake, we're going to see more bikes at the front. And I can see Binder with a sprint. And Pete, what about the Grand Prix? You know, we've had, like we say, you get one end of it where it's close, and then you get the opposite where it's someone who just completely disappears. What do you think? Do you think it's going to be that or something else?
I think it'll be close. Yeah, I think the way MotoGP is these days, isn't it? It's very hard for we were speaking about Oliveira, but that was, you know, unique being the first race at the track, and he knew it obviously better than others, and everything clicked into place for him. But it's very hard to have that level of dominance now. So yeah, I think by Sunday Bagnaia will be the guy to beat again. I think that yeah, even if he's perhaps not ready by the sprint, barring any unforeseen chatter issues, I think for me he'll be the guy on Sunday again.
Okay, and Rob, just before you give me your prediction, is there any Ducati riders you think might surprise people this weekend apart from the usual? Do you think anyone like Fabio Di Giannantonio, Marco Bezzecchi, even maybe Andrea Bastianini or Alex Marquez?
Di Giannantonio is the name that I was thinking. I think he's, provided he's feeling fitter than the Grand Prix after his crash in the sprint, if he's back to being 100%, I think Di Giannantonio is going to go very well this weekend. In terms of the Grand Prix, I am going to be boring now and go with Bagnaia as well.
Brilliant. This is great. We're just going to have another Pecco Bagnaia clean sweep. We are. I do think he is actually going to win this weekend, but I don't think it's going to be easy for him. I think it's going to be quite a close Grand Prix, and I think we could see four or five riders in this pack, but it's the unknown. We don't know what it's going to be like. Like Pete said, you could have chatter issues. You don't know which rider could have this. It could just throw their weekend, but I think it's going to be a good race weekend. And also, if you're in the UK, I just seen it yesterday, the race is available on ITV to watch for free. So if you don't have the TNT subscription, you can watch it on ITV this weekend. And yeah, I think that's good for everyone to get watching MotoGP, because it's much better than that other sport that people think is the pinnacle of motorsport. And, you know, there's no overtakes and someone wins every single race, you know. But yeah, watch MotoGP this weekend. It'll be worth it. And other than that, yeah, I think we've pretty much covered everything. A good weekend.
This is where I don't say that I'm a Max Verstappen fan and that I do.
It's okay, Rob. Don't worry. F1 will get better just whenever they stop Red Bull somehow. But yeah, MotoGP, more Superbike on this weekend. Plenty for everyone to watch. And I think it's going to be very good. So make sure to subscribe, download the podcast wherever you get it from, watch it on YouTube. Don't forget to leave a comment on the YouTube video, like the video, follow us on social media. Head to Christ.net, of course. We'll have everything covered from this weekend and, of course, everything else. Other than that, we'll see you next time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.